WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I am back in the homestead after many, many crab cakes, many, many beers. We're in the middle of this thing. Bill Cole joins us now from Cole Roofing. And, of course, Gordian Energy. I saw lots of solar panels out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation, as well as the Restaurant Association of Maryland. We've been eating well, drinking well. At some point, I'm going to get you out for a crab cake, dude. I don't know when this happens. Maybe later on in the month. I know you're busy. We have Ocean City obligations with Mako next week. We'll be there with Ben Cardin and Heather Mazur and some others. How are you, brother? How's the roofing business? Window Nation came and put my windows in this week, and I tell you, you get windows, you see right out, and I had you guys out here looking at the roof at the radio station. It's that time of the year to get things done, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It's the end of summer. Like, everyone's trying to get everything done. But your solar comment, I wanted to say that, like, with the passage of the – or almost passage or passage, partial passage, whatever it's called, of the Inflation Reduction Act, which I just love how they name things. Like, that's really fun. Can you imagine the – sitting around the room trying to figure out how to name our bill so that it has the most marketing and PR associated with it.
Well, anyway, you know what I saw? I was out in Oakland, Maryland, going through a whole bunch of like war stuff and antique flea market that we named all the wars too. Operation Enduring Spirit. They were shirts, right? Operation whatever, you know? So we have to name everything for
we
sure.
We do. So I want to say that the passage of the bill is going to lead to more solar panels. But what I always forget is that when they pass these bills, they're so complicated to even understand what they wrote that at this point we're half a week. Probably some people have had it for more than a week to try and unpack it. And I still can't get like a real clear summary as to the impact it's going to have on our world. So we're optimistic. There's definitely some good stuff there for solar. And I don't know whether I can pontificate on the other, unintended consequences that come from bills like this. But, things are looking up, I guess.
Well, the unintended consequences of me going to Pittsburgh Steelers training camp in Latrobe, Pennsylvania the other day, and the unintended consequences of being in downtown Oakland and having a woman show off Dennis Colatzos's, a Coons Ford, a Bronco Sport to my wife in the middle of downtown Oakland, say, you should go over to West Virginia and check this place out. We started driving around. We went to these beautiful towns out along the border on the West Virginia side, north of Pennsylvania, on the north of, I would say, Deep Creek Lake, up toward Falling Water, Ohio Pile, the Youghiogheny River, people whitewater rafting. But I'll say this, saw solar panels everywhere along life's highway, more on the Pennsylvania side than the Maryland side, which made me say, I should talk business with Bill Cole about this. But my wife and I saw farms, and we saw these beautiful farmhouse structures, not silos, right? Lots of those, but these long farming areas with, I want to call them metal roofs. I don't know what they were. They're the color of Camden Yards. They're these brick colored roofs that are made of metal. And then we would see the solar in the field next to it. And Jen said, you got to ask Bill Cole why the solar's not on the roofs of these buildings. And I'm thinking, well, they're farmers. They have a lot of land. Maybe they're using some of the land for this. Maybe the weight of the panel. I don't know. But I figured I'll ask you because I thought it was interesting how farmers and people with land use solar. I mean, most people just have a house and maybe they can put the solar on their top or something like that. But if you have land, there are a lot of people using it, not just for solar, but for windmills on the West Virginia side too.
Yeah, I mean, you started to sort of unpack the logical decision-making there, and you were headed down the right path. Like, the barns probably weren't built with the structural capacity to handle the extra load.
See, I didn't say that to my wife. I didn't say the structural capacity.
Well, whatever.
I just said, it's probably too heavy.
Yeah, that's a much better way to say it anyway. In many cases, what you're seeing are not projects that were designed to like offset the farmer's electrical usage. They were built to push power out into the grid and ultimately sell it somewhere else. So at that point, they're trying to get
power
as big
business,
as possible.
Not in the, I'm going to save money on my own farm.
Right.
Okay.
And it's cheaper to build it on the ground than it is on the roof. the main, I guess, contemplation decision point for the farmer is either they're farming it or a tenant farmer's farming it and they're paying them for the land. And, you know, maybe they're getting $300, $400 an acre for soybeans. That those numbers are probably wrong because, you know, now soybeans probably cost more than gold bar, but whatever. And then solar can afford a much higher lease payment. So for a almost what should have been retired farmer without, you know, kids in the business or kids have gone on and moved on and went to college and got other jobs, and there's no one in the family that's going to farm the land, this is a great alternative to, you know, getting
it's a solar farm,
a productive lease payment.
You know, is it called a solar farm or am I making that
up? It is. No, it is. Yeah, it totally is. So in the case of Pennsylvania, you know, there's so much ag land that when they had a vibrant state program, lots of money flew to the state and they built lots of systems and they actually oversupplied the market. The state SREC program collapsed and it has stayed that way since. Now they're trying to
oversupply, meaning
you're making power
cheaper than the state can make it.
No, if the state mandates that a certain percentage of solar has to come from renewable sources, and then they put a compliance fee to that. So if you're Exelon and you're selling power, I don't know that they are in Pennsylvania, but whatever, they have to get a certain percentage of their raw electricity from a renewable source. If they don't, they pay a fee. So in lieu of paying that fee, states created solar renewable energy credits.
But I bet they didn't create that in West Virginia where they're trying to get coal out of the ground still, right? Or Western Pennsylvania where they're still trying to get coal out of the ground. They don't want to meet Mr. Coal with the only coal they want is the COAL, not the COLE. They're not interested in the Gordian. They're interested in the mines because that's what they own, right? That's what they know.
Yeah. So West Virginia, stuff is happening in West Virginia, mostly driven by the fact that you have large pieces of land that you can't do anything else with. So now it's like, well, I can just let it sit there. Or
it's not farmland, it's rocks.
Yeah,
it's cliffs,
I could build solar on it. And if I build solar on it, at least I'm getting some kind of income. It's not as attractive as it would be if it was in Maryland at this point, but it still is getting done. And it will get done. You know, the states adopt these programs at different points in time. They all tweak them, you know, they all think they're smarter than the other guy. So they create their own little nuance to their programs. And that's why our business went from Maryland to doing stuff in New York to doing stuff in Minnesota. We've done stuff in Louisiana. We move around and we're following where the programs, not by our choice, but by third-party money that comes in and invests in these. They're looking for the highest returns. So they're chasing the low hanging fruit. And we just, as like the builder guys, have to kind of follow them around.
Bill Cole's here. We'll get to baseball. We'll get to football. We'll get to crab cakes and beer. But I was out on life's highway driving around on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, seeing all this solar stuff. And I thought, I'll talk a little solar with Cole here this week. Orioles in your office, I would think. I'm not in an office right now, right? And I could sit here and talk all day. I don't know how many people are really watching the games or people coming back. But the people in my world who love baseball, and, you know, I'm one of those people. I like to see the Orioles do well, you know, even though they haven't treated me well over the course of time. I realize what it means for the city. I realize what it means for the people who love them. I realize what it means, could mean for downtown business moving forward over the next 5 years, that if people start going to the games again. I remember when people went to the games in the 90s. It was a big deal. It mattered. It mattered a lot. It mattered a lot to me living downtown when people would show up. But the first thing is, in an office like yours and a roofing business, you know, I would say to Moeller, if you teach at a school or all the school teachers, is everybody in the office? Are the workers excited? I'm getting the vibe that they've done something here over the last month or two that you and I would have said in May. We won't be talking about the Orioles in August. We won't have to. We almost have to now, right? Like every day you're going to work, you know whether they won or lost.
No, I'll be honest, I don't, but that's me. That's not the public. I mean, the prior part of this conversation is what consumes most of my time right now. It's trying to figure out where the hell we're going to build solar. But I mean, I definitely think they did enough to where if our fan base was in a place of no hope, right? They've done enough that you get baited into that, like, yeah, we might, there might be something here. There might, you know, so.
Oh, you're five games over 500 in August. You got to like, and there's right. six teams they let in now. This isn't you and me, American League East and West, and you had the win back in 1981, right? I mean, it's different. But all that being said, the fact that they play a soap opera, right? They have a different, there's a different heartbeat to baseball when you're winning because they play every night. And maybe you don't feel that through Aprils, Mays, Junes, and Julys when they lose 120 games for 5 years in a row and there's a plague and you haven't been to the ballpark lately and your kids aren't bugging you to go to the ballpark lately. But I would think in a company where you have 100 employees that, you know, the hats start to come out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to feel that a little bit. I felt it at Western Maryland. I was in a bar in Frederick on Friday night. The Pirates were playing the Orioles. The game started late. We were at a Dutch's Daughter. By the way, best prime rib I've ever had in my life. I have to say that because it was. We headed out in Frederick to Idiom and to Brewer's Alley. And the games were on and people were like watching the Orioles play in Frederick. And I thought, well, that's something to see on a Friday night in the middle of summer. I didn't expect when I put the tour together back in April that people would actually be watching a Pirates-Orioles game in a bar. But they were.
I don't think we put the hats away ever. Hats are like that. They just stay out. T-shirts maybe, right?
Well, they don't fit.
Right. The interest level is certainly more. I think what happens is you get drawn back in and then you remember, oh yeah, but like baseball's goofy where the Yankees can pay twice as much in payroll and we really have no chance.
Not twice as much, six times as much.
Okay. And then you remember all that stuff.
Six times
as much. Oh, God damn it. I hate baseball. That's so stupid. You know, and then you go right back to there. But
I remember when they had to trade Don Baylor.
Right. But it did show back up in your purview for about, you know, 20 minutes. So, I'm 100% on board with you around getting people back to the ballpark and the vibrancy that that creates in downtown. And some of that just comes from, or I guess one of the consequences of that is that I believe that helps the public safety problems. Like when people come down, when things are alive, you know, that stuff goes in other places. So when ghost towns are created, I believe, you know, crime and all kinds of bad stuff comes into that emptiness. So, yeah, I mean,
it feels less safe to be downtown with less people. I don't, there's no doubt.
Absolutely.
About that, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
right. I had a friend ask me if he is trying to give recommendations to someone else about Baltimore. And they said, don't try and snowball me. Right. Like we have a reputation of it being a pretty scary place, but you know, I want to go. And he's going to come in on his boat, but he wants to put his boat over by Rusty Scupper. And he wanted to know, is it safe to walk from Rusty Scupper to the baseball game and then back at 10:30, 11 o'clock
God.
At night?
Right past my house. But I would say, of course it's safe. And if they, well, that squeegee shooting happened right in front of your house.
You know, I told
right,
them.
That's the problem with this, right?
I told them that it is safe. You know, like if you use like data, it's safe. Do I believe that they would make that walk and feel comfortable the whole way? Probably not. Right. And like, if you're from Baltimore, you know, like where not to go and you walk with a purpose and you go where you're going. And, you know, I mean, like,
dude, I can promise you if they walk from the Rusty Scupper to Camden Yards and back again, they're fine.
Right.
I've only done that 10 million times. And I don't even know that I've really been properly panhandled along that walk. I certainly have never felt threatened along that walk.
I agree with you, but for people who either aren't urban, you know, goers.
Well, I spent every day of my life there for 19 years. They've never been. So it's a whole different thing, right? I felt unsafe in Frankfurt, Germany, right? Like literally, I pulled this giant, beautiful city. I felt unsafe when I showed up because it did look dodgy. And then I checked in and the woman at the Marriott, full serve, giant, $300 a night Marriott, says to me, "Don't park your car on the street in front of here." And I'm like, "What? I'm from Baltimore. What do you mean?" And she's like, "Don't park your car. You know, you don't want to do that." And I'm like, "You're a Marriott. You're in Frankfurt, Germany. What, like, how can that be possible?" But I've been places that I have been forewarned ahead of time. This is not safe. Now, I walked around Amsterdam at 3 o'clock in the morning. Maybe I was safe. Maybe I wasn't. I think I was pretty safe. I didn't see anybody that looked riff-raffy or it's not that sort of culture in that way. Same thing with Japan and different places. But this is an American issue walking around a city, right? Wouldn't matter what boat he takes the city into, right? I mean,
That's totally it. And how do you, right? How do you differentiate between the uncomfortable feeling you have from going somewhere new or not knowing your surroundings or having not gone down that road or not walked that path? That creates a general sense of uncomfortableness. And then how do you differentiate between that and actually your internal DNA fight or flight radar of,
you know, what's really weird tigers, to me, dude? I don't think I'm going to get shot. Let me get flippant for a second because I am who I am and I'm from Dundalk and I've been on the Archie Bunker side of all
no,
this.
No, don't. Yeah,
dude,
don't bless
I
us
went into
that.
These farm stores out in East Bejesus, you know, next to the Trump sign, around the corner from the Mastriano sign, behind the Fox sign, Cox sign, but right in front of the Confederate flag. It's always in front of a Confederate flag. All of these stores with the Brandon signs and the F. Biden signs and the like, and they're all, every one of them. You see my little peace sign here from Window Nation? Every one of them has one thing on it. It's not a flag. It's a gun. So the guns are – I pulled into this East Bejesus thing up in – it was above Deep Creek Lake. We pulled in. I could buy Let's Go Brandon signs for my lawn for 99 cents. I could buy all the NRA, all the gun stuff, all the give me my guns or give me my liberty. And I'm thinking to myself, I walked in with these – these rednecks, I don't know what else to say. You know, I mean, it looked like I walked into Hee Haw. Everybody's got a gun shirt on. Everybody's got a gun shirt up in dude, I stopped to get gas and buy like a drink. And everything about it screams guns, Confederate flags. And I'm thinking to myself, these are the people that come to Baltimore that are afraid of somebody shooting them with a gun. It's really an amazing thing. I see more. If that sort of stuff were sold in the Inner Harbor, if everything in the Inner Harbor had an NRA and a gun and a flag on it and camo, I'd be more afraid of Baltimore. So I go out to the sticks and I see everybody wants a gun. Everybody has a gun. And I'm thinking, the hell you need a gun for out here unless you're shooting a raccoon? I mean, maybe a bear. I was a little afraid of the bears, but I could get mace for that. I don't think I need a gun for that. But going out to the sticks is different for a city guy because of this obsession with Trump, guns, the Confederate flag, and guns and more guns. That's all I saw. Every time I stopped at one of these stores to pee, get gas, get a drink, it's all guns. It's wild. It really is wild.
So there's, you know, this ongoing debate about how feverish the political divide is and how it's never been worse in the history of our country and all this. And I don't believe that.
I don't
all.
Think I pull into these places in 1995 and see Bush, Reagan. Maybe there's freedom stuff. Maybe there's flag stuff because that's big. That's freedom and the flag are everything, right? But the guns, totally different thing the last 15 years as to the worship of Confederates, a political cult and a candidate and a human that they think is going to save them in some way. And I know better. And then the guns and just the guns. There's a worship of that in places that's very obvious to see when you drive the back. I was not on, by the way, I never touched 70 or 68 once we got to Frederick. Honestly, we took the back roads.
That's cool.
Every single place we went. We went through Boonesboro, Middletown. We never touched 68 or 70 on purpose. Yeah. And so we saw the real what's going on in the state. They're not voting for Westmore. They're not.
Right.
You know, so, that's very clear.
But I just want to make it like a human societal psychology comment. So like if you're residing out there pre smartphone, like, what is your daily, weekly life like?
The Frederick News Post gets dumped on your.
It's your pretty porch. Simple, right?
At 33 like, channels of cable TV. And that's right. Talking about in the 80s now. That's 40 years ago, dude. If you're living life like it's the 60s, and I guess I saw people out there with a rotary phone and, antenna where they get the station from Hagerstown in, right?
No, where my line of thinking is.
Where are you getting your information?
You go from a somewhat insulated, very community-based, less than 15-mile radius, like, universe to completely opening up due to a smartphone every piece of information that has ever been available to mankind. And we give our people zero training along that pathway, right?
Every one of them put on Fox News. Every place I went, Fox News was on television, like it was the only channel that exists. Like, it literally is the only channel that I saw more CNN lies and CNN sucks stuff on trees, on stumps. I saw it in Southern Maryland last year, but it's really alarming. And there's 100 signs for every human, right? Like, if you love Jesus or you love God or you love Trump, your entire farm is a solar panel to Let's Go Brandon signs, literally, right?
Right.
And you got two votes in the House, maybe three if you got a kid who's 18, right? Like, so I see how few people vote in Garrett County. I see how few people vote in Allegheny County. And I go out there and I'm like, well, they're all voting red. That's cool. But there's only 2,100 of them that vote. Like, you know, when I see the voting rolls and then I look out my window in downtown Baltimore and I say, oh, I don't see any Brandon signs or any Cox signs or any Wes Moore. So I don't see any Aruna Miller. I don't see any signs. I just see 384,000 people that are going to vote. And I just drove past 200 farms where there's 100 complete voters. It's amazing how out of line the message is, right? How big the flag is, how big the cross is, how big the F you Joe Biden sign is, and how committed they are to it.
Yeah,
but I go to the farm store and there's only five people in the farm store and I haven't passed 10, but they are big into the ideology of the ideology. They are bought in. They are drinking the red Kool-Aid. They really are.
I believe that's because they're not hearing any other message.
I would agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? So if
and they've tied it to the church, which the church is the church has a Let's Go Brandon sign in front of it, literally. Right. So, like, this is where on Sunday when they go there, this is what there is no. They hate Joe Biden and they don't know him. So, I mean, I don't. It's really a bizarre time in America in the second summer of driving around and going into Pennsylvania and West Virginia and spending more time in those areas to see and feel it. It really does give you a taste of politics in a way that you can't have it in the city on the Beltway. Not even in Harford County where everything's a red sign. And I get that. It's a different ideology. To your point, they haven't been to the city and been squeegeed. They just read about it. People in Harford County have come to the city. People here, they have a more hardened opinion. You know what I mean? And they interact with more humans. To your point, they're going to meet African-American people. They're going to meet Democrats. They're going to meet people who don't agree with them. They're going to meet independent people like Bill Cole. But out there, it really there is only one ideology, and I saw that, and it does frighten me how much hatred there is.
Well, your whole circle is 25 miles around your little town, and can you imagine being the 15, 16, 17-year-old kid who, you know, stumbles upon this other website and reads some of this other news, and then all of a sudden starts to formulate, because, you know, every teenager wants to rebel. So they just automatically fly to this rebellious. I mean, that town will crush that poor kid, right? Like, there's no way you're allowed to be like that out here. You need to conform. You need to have your pickup truck and your guns and all of that. So humans manage people when the messaging, when they're not taught how to use Facebook and they don't understand that Facebook is automatically serving up the same stuff
that what you want to hear,
want to consume, then they unknowingly, subconsciously believe that everyone in the world believes this. And everyone is talking about this. And all the people like me think this is the best answer. And there's no other alternatives. And I don't, you know, that's a problem that didn't previously exist. So although I don't think today is the worst political, you know, ideological separation in the history of our country, I do think that the internet, the social channels have created like such a barrier that we will have a very difficult time bringing back together.
Because it's been 165 years since the Civil War. Like I look at these people with the Confederate flags and say, do you understand what that represents, and that they lost the war, and that we're in America now, and your parents and your parents' parents' parents, we're all in America under this flag. Like I ideologically don't understand it. And I do chalk it up to education, variety, being amongst other people, right, being more open-minded to different kinds of people. I mean, I'm thinking of these people. You've probably never met a Muslim or a Jew or an African American or somebody from another culture, or to even understand what Turkey represents or what Saudi Arabia might represent. I know you don't have a passport. You know, I know you've never been outside of America or anything, you know, outside Ocean City. So there is this, and then you realize like, this is most of Kansas. This is most of Iowa. This is all of Montana. This is all of Idaho. I've been to all these places that the being away from humans, living in an isolated place, probably worked until cable television came, and then MTV showed up and Elvis showed up, probably been in the Beatles before that on Ed Sullivan, right? If you had that. But then to your point, the internet and smartphones in 2007, 8, 9, 10, that period of time, kids had it, kids had email. Kids went to school, even the school down the end of the street stopped using paper and pencil, and you needed to have a device. And then it's probably as the culture divide of a 50 or 60 or 70 year old person living that life 10 years ago, who's now 50, 60, 70, and may still have a flip phone, may have cable TV. I'm just wondering where these people get information and what they box off. Because to your point, if you get the internet's only serving you what you want, and you probably don't even know it.
And yeah, I don't know. And I think in those small segments of the population, not small as a massive group, right? As a massive group, it's a large percentage of the population, but they live in these small cohorts. And I just envision like the daily farmer's market, and all you are hearing is like regurgitated Fox News lines from
I saw Trump get raided the other night, and I was in a bar outside of Deep Creek. We were the youngest people in the bar. There were seven or eight people. And I watched them watching in real time Trump get raided. And you would have thought that somebody raped Santa Claus. You know what I mean? Like there is a hero worship of this guy that the Celebrity Apprentice television show must. They see a competency and an intelligence in him and a decency in him.
It's
unspeakable.
That's a misread. They don't see those traits in him. They see him as an extension of them. Right? That's really what it is. I don't look, sound, or smell like those guys, but I look, smell, and sound like that guy. Like, I might not have that guy's money, but if I did, I'd be just as big a jerk as he is. And those guys aren't looking out for me. That guy is, because that's all he ran around the country screaming about for, you know, 5-6 years was he was going to take care of the, you know, the Rust Belt. So I don't know that they connect there, and they believe more. I have to believe this. This is my opinion that they feel less like those others than they feel like him. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I think to myself, when I'm on these foreign roads, what in the world purpose would they have for Baltimore, Maryland, or for city people or people in a city other than, and I looked around and I'll get flipping now and I'll say, who the hell do you think eats the corn? You know what I mean? Like, who's smoking the tobacco? So I'm thinking to myself, you're growing all this for the people in the cities who purchase it and consume it. So hating on the cities and the people in the cities who actually consume your product probably is Bill. I'll end on this because I didn't want to take it in this direction, but it's fresh to me after right. 4 days of driving around. This is all I saw. Once you get out of your, I stayed at the Gary Inn. I stayed in a little motel, beautiful little motel, family owned motel. You could buy it. It's for sale now. It's lovely, but everywhere I went, there was the sticks. Every gas station, every restaurant, every meal I ate, every picture I took, every farm we stopped and took pictures of beautiful farms, every one of them had one thing in common. They all had a Let's Go Brandon sign up. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not pro-America. That's hating me and hating the rest, hating everybody in the city who's down here trying to figure stuff out, trying to put this thing together so that we can buy your corn and support you and give you funds to get a solar panel or, you know, whatever you need for irrigation so you can make food. And we're happy to buy the ears of corn at $1 a piece or 50 cents, whatever it is. But there has to be this point where, like, I just saw so much hatred, dude. I mean, I'm a Baltimore positive guy. There is a real hatred of me, Westmore, Brooke Learman, Democrats, anybody who might vote Democrat, there is a real, you're screwing us. Right. And we're going to get a gun because we got guns. We love guns. We need guns. And that's the message. And I've done it two summers in a row.
I know.
And I've done it on the Eastern Shore and a Western Shore and a Southern Shore. And like, I've been around it's alarming. It's alarming, dude. It's frightening to be in these Civil War places drinking Antietam beer, and Monocacy beer and talking about these battlefields and stuff. And all these people, I went into a place in Oakland and it was a wall of guns. And I said to my wife, how would I walk out of here with one of these? How long would it take me? She said, it would probably take you about whatever the $325 it would take to get up to the counter and the ammo. And like, I would have had a gun in 5 minutes. I have no doubt about that. You know, that nobody was checking any clearance on me at the pawn shop in Oakland for a gun. They sell guns the way we sell bubble gum.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
Oh, I believe that. Come on, dude.
Some guns you can, but not all. Anyway. I do love the topic around so you started it saying that those farmers don't appreciate, the city dwellers, right? And I think you're 100% right. And I think that we've done a really bad job of understanding or telling the story that both of those parts of our society, their purpose and their function, because historically, right, the urban center, the port city, its function was to allow, if we go way, way back, it was because they needed to send their crap to England so that England would buy it so that they would have stuff. And then England would send stuff back here. So
we were
would
the China
stuff.
For England. We made right. the stuff. Right.
So if we move past that, like, I don't think any of us are eating any of the corn grown in Frederick. Like, I don't believe any of that. Like, mass corn, you know what I mean? Like we have Iowa. We don't need corn in Maryland. Like, the corn in Maryland is grown so the cows eat it. Because you gotta keep the cows closer, right? So, there is no... I'm loading my cart and my horses are going to drive us down into Baltimore.
Right. So the buggy's coming in here. Right.
Right, so we can
see that at farmers markets. We see that on Hartford Road, for crying out, everywhere around town. Right.
I get that. But what is the function of the urban environment to the person who doesn't live there? What is that function? For a while, it was
being an economic engine for the state, right? Literally.
Well, for a while, it was entertainment, right? Like, if you wanted to see the baseball team, you were going to have to go to the big city. What happened? What is it now?
You have to come to the big city, right?
If you wanted to go to college, you needed to go into the city. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, what purpose do we serve those people? Like, I hear you.
Yeah, if you live in Cumberland, why would you come to Baltimore?
Or why would you care about it? Like, your point is they hate us. They hate you because they know that everybody in the city is going to vote differently, and they're going to vote for the bad guys, and I want the good guys. And so they develop a distaste. But my question is, what benefit to those people is the city providing? Why should they care?
It's a place they don't ever want to come, right? Ever, no matter what.
I'm just trying, like, it's not meant to be rhetorical, but maybe it is just rhetorical at this point in time.
Well,
but
we are a divided country, right? I mean, we're divided states of America. Really feel it. I feel it. My accountant in Harford County is a Trumper. He's a Republican. He's always been one. Every Republican I know will be a Republican. Leonard Raskin's a Republican. When we sit and we talk, I don't feel like there is a hatred of me for not being that, or I wouldn't be welcome, or we couldn't be friends. I definitely have felt more of that the last 5 years among some people in my direction. And I certainly feel that way in the other direction. In some cases where I'm like, maybe we don't have enough in common to be friends anymore, but I don't hate you. But I try to understand you. I think the people on these farms with the guns and the Let's Go Brandons that are out, they're not trying to understand anything. I mean, like that's the hardest part for me, is that I don't think I could have sat in the Hee Haw place I was in the other day and had any sort of conversation with the three men with the NRA signs and is shining up their guns while they're sitting there having coffee at 8 a.m. I don't know who they're looking to shoot or what they're looking to shoot, but they want to shoot something, you know, and that's a different mindset than me being in Harford County in the ROFO or the Panera and running into some guy with a Make America Great hat. Right. You know, I think there's a different ideology going on where those people mingle amongst other people in a city where the people on the farms, they've never met a guy with long hair.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Right. Tolerance, right? Because you live in this environment where you just run into this stuff. You're aware of it. You interact with it. You can't be all extreme because your worldview just pulls you closer to the center, right? Sure. I think what the story for them is, without urban environments, we don't invent stuff, right? So the other reason humans congregate in an urban environment is because the collective brain becomes more creative. And we're able to be more efficient and create new things easier than if John's, you know, in Garrett County and Bob's in West Virginia and Fred's in, Northern Virginia, somewhere out there. They collectively cannot collaborate in an effective way because, you know, like one is the chemist and one is the physicist and one is, when you get all those groups together, when you get smart people from Hopkins and smart people from Loyola and smart people from UMBC and you get smart people from T. Rowe and smart people from Legg and smart people from Brown. And when you get them together,
or smart people from Hopkins and University of Maryland, right? Yeah.
Right. They create new stuff. And that's what happens when you bring collectively the brains together in smaller, closer cohorts. That's why Ford, GM, and Chrysler all were in Detroit because all the smart car people all moved there. And that was why they started to create. And then now you get this whole ecosystem.
And then it made great music, Motown music, right?
Right, right. And then you get so turned into a whole thing. We probably didn't even get to talk about my trip to Detroit, but talk about walking around an urban environment at 12 o'clock at night and feeling totally safe and comfortable. I definitely experienced that in Detroit.
Say that again. Now, Mike Rosenfeld said that. I did a long segment with Mike because Mike went on the trip with you from Web Connection. If you missed that, please go listen to that, because Mike and I did a nice chunky segment on what's Detroit got that Baltimore doesn't have that 15 years ago was burned down. And I remember seeing all that. And I know Detroit's coming back to life. And I know people like you are studying it and studying Nashville and studying other places. Bill Cole is here. I'm drinking my Royal Farms coffee from the road in the Cole Roofing mug. I am back from a Western Maryland run that included, Frederick, Hagerstown, Cumberland, Deep Creek Lake, all sorts of parts, a little West Virginia. I went up to Latrobe, Pennsylvania. By the way, and I want to say something to you and to the whole audience about driving out to the sticks, because I've been a little bit judgmental about all those guns and Let's Go Brandon signs, and just thinking that's probably not a good thing. On the way back from Latrobe, the side road through, and I know you've driven to Pittsburgh before, the Somerset stop is where Shanksville is, where Flight 93 went down. I was very familiar with that area when the plane went down in 2001 from driving up to Pittsburgh and stopping at the Eaton Park in Somerset and resting my feet and whatnot. We actually went out to the field, and I don't know that I know anybody that's done it. No, nobody has said to me, you need to do it, or take, I haven't seen pictures of it online. Yeah. I didn't really know what it looked like or how mature, but I literally thought they must've built a little something out in the, it's an unbelievable thing that they built out there. They built an access road out to where the crash happened. It's a solemn, incredible place, and we went out there. If you haven't had the chance to do that and you get up in that part of the world, it was a place we had to stop, and then once we got there we couldn't leave. It was one of those kind of things, you know.
So we hit it on the way back from Seven Springs this past winter, so it was cold, but
it was beautiful when I was there.
It is like understanding that I got my 12 and 9-year old with
me. And they weren't around. They don't remember
the sky. They got no idea, right? That building and museum, or whatever you call that, memorial, whatever you want to call that.
It's a wall. It's literally,
has done such an amazing job of connecting the fear, the unknown, the tragedy. Like if you walk up and down those aisles and you take the time to read and interact and listen, like they have the phone calls. I mean, if you experience that, and to your point, you need to like set aside time. This is not a drive through park.
I thought it was a 15-minute thing, and we're there an hour. My wife's in tears. And, you know, of course, my wife got leukemia on the back end of 9/11.
Not at all. Right.
So it just was a different thing for her.
Like, I don't know that my girls understood the resolve and the energy that came out of the other side of that for the country. Right. Like we're talking about
every time they go to an airport and they check in at TSA, you know, that's where I'm reminded of it.
Yeah. But that's just the way they think it is. Right. So, but like,
if they say, why do I have to take my clothes off? Why is this woman grabbing my crotch? Literally, you know, why is this happening, Dad, at the airport? Well, there you go. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just think like the connection to the tragedy was done really well. It gave my girls perspective. They were very sad, very upset, you know, and they didn't live through it. My wife and I are like trying to make it back to the car.
I had to get out of there. You know, I was on one of those flights, 2 weeks before the tragedy. I was flying from New York out, from Boston out to LA for, to work. I was syndicated. So I was on a flight that was a similar flight 2 weeks before. And like, so it strikes me a little different. I flew out of the Newark airport.
I remember the day, I had a meeting at a state highway building that sat right next to one of the runways at BWI. And, you know, as I'm driving to the meeting is, like I watched the second plane go in from my office, right? Because the first plane goes on and somebody's got the news on TV and they're like, oh my God, what's going on? So then you go and you stand. By the time you got in front of the TV, that was when the second plane went in. then I knew I had to go to this meeting. So I got in the truck. So I'm listening to the radio. They're trying to figure out what's happening. We're calling people off roofs, right? Because we have no idea what's happening. The Pentagon happens, blah, blah, blah. By the time I pulled in that parking lot, these planes are landing on this runway at BWI so close to one another. Like, you couldn't believe that this was acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Like, they are coming in and you are watching one and there is another plane like on its ass.
And none of them are bound for Baltimore. These people that are coming to Baltimore stuck here.
I mean, it was,
they're on their way to Detroit or wherever they were going. Right.
Totally surreal. And I highly recommend that place. I think it's
you know, we went through my travelogue and I'll talk crab cakes. I'll talk about the breweries. The breweries are unbelievable. Yeah. The trip was unbelievable, but it's hard to see the political climate of the country and feel like, how could we ever get united again? And I did feel that in an election year, and it's good for me to feel that. It's good for me to go out and see what's going on. Bill Cole knows what's going on roofs. He's been doing it for 103 years. And his family. Cole Roofing, find them at coleroofing.com, as well as at Gordian Energy. And you can always find him on the front of Baltimore Positive. Dude, time's short. We meandered today, but that's why I travel, is to learn stuff and talk about it with people like you.
Love it. Love it.
I got a Let's Go Brandon sign if you want one. I pick one up. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking things we need to talk about. It's BaltimorePositive.com.